From the New York Times on Tuesday, SpaceX went public in June in the largest ever initial public offering, turning its founder Elon Musk into the world's first trillionaire, at least temporarily. In its first earnings report as a public company this week, SpaceX said its capital expenditures jumped to $18.4 billion in the second quarter, up nearly seven times from a year ago, overshadowing a 92% increase in revenue to $7.8 billion. On the same day, Tuesday, our next guest had a blog post about the viability of Starlink, which is a satellite internet service provided by SpaceX, and whether or not that could provide internet access in some of the parts where it has yet to reach with cable or fiber optics or DSL. We're talking about broadband this hour throughout Wisconsin on the Lee Rayburn Show, and we want to invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think satellite internet access may be right for you? Do you have trouble getting the internet where you are today? You can also email us, talk@wpr.org. Our guest, Doug Dawson, president of CCG Consulting, a telecom consulting firm with clients nationwide. Doug's worked in the telecom industry going back to 1978. He has worked for Wisconsin communities like Waupaca and Door counties. He also has a daily blog, Pots and Pans by CCG.com, where we found his story about Starlink. And Doug, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Lee. It's good to be here.
Let us start with Elon Musk's Starlink through SpaceX and what it might provide for consumers in terms of affordable internet access. Is it an option now, and what do you see in the future?
It is an option now, probably to any people in rural areas. It's not really available in cities where houses are densely packed. And so they will sell to some people in a city, but once they get a couple, they just go. They can only serve somewhere around 15 people per square mile. They just don't want to go to cities. Now, in rural areas, that's a lot of people, right? So it is available. Now, there are places it's not available. I happen to live in Appalachia, and it doesn't do very well with the hills and trees. So there's a lot of places here where it actually doesn't work. I know I'm very familiar with Door County. I would imagine it's going to have a trouble in the woods in Door County. But it out in the open plains, it works really well. They have about 4 million U.S. customers. So the answer is yes, it's very available. Is it affordable? I don't think so. They just raised their basic rate to $130 a month.
Oh,
that's kind of expensive. Yeah, you say exactly what everyone else.
They do
have a $50 option. It's slower. It has a data cap, but it's not available everywhere. They only roll that out in places where they haven't gotten anybody to sign up. But after a while, they kind of try to push it up to the expensive one. So yeah.
Yeah, Doug, when I talked initially about the potential for Starlink for satellite internet access, one of the immediate things that when you think about where we're struggling in Wisconsin to reach with cable and fiber optics, it's the North Woods, it's, you know, our rural parts, but not necessarily the agriculture, some ag, some farm, but really in our woods. And the first thing that was brought up to me is if you want satellite internet access up there, you're going to have to knock down a lot of trees. Does it need a direct connection like that? Do the trees interfere?
Yeah. It needs a direct connection. So it doesn't need a horizon-to-horizon connection. You don't have to cut down all your trees, but you have to cut down quite a few, or you have to put up a very tall pole. So they don't tell you about that. Like, oh, yeah, if you just put up a 150-foot pole in your yard and you forget it, like, well, you realize that cost me like $12,000, right? So the answer is you do have to get up. An awful lot of people can get it by putting it on their roof.
Okay.
But if your roof also has trees over it, then you're in trouble. So, yeah.
I saw this story from Ars Technica where SpaceX says it has plans for Starlink Mobile to compete against the big three wireless carriers and take a large number of customers away from them. Does SpaceX have the possibility to compete against AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile as you see it, Doug?
Here's the funny thing. Of course, you know, I think everybody understands that Elon Musk is a little open to hyperbole. So he says that he's going to take 35% of all the broadband customers in the United States. He just said that a week ago. Will he ever do that? You know, they're never going to have ever going to have the speeds and the capability to serve a neighborhood. I live in a city in Nashville, and they're never going to be able to serve all the people in a town like this. So, you know, I think that he's talking to stockholders there, not talking to real people who are going to buy it. Now, I got to tell you, I talked to a farmer in Wisconsin who just saved his life. I mean, he had no broadband, and he got Starlink 3 or 4 years ago, and to him, it was a lifesaver. So for people who don't have broadband, this is wonderful stuff.
So I could see where it would be possible, but I would also see that there seems to be a lack of competition, and at least SpaceX has launched, what, thousands of satellites into the air in order to get global coverage and make this available. So is this a monopoly then when it comes to satellite internet? Do you see competition on the horizon, Doug?
There's a lot. First off, they have 12,000 satellites today. They're approved for 15,000. They have asked to increase that to 100,000. You're going to look up and see 13 dots at all times in the sky if they have 100,000 satellites, right?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is yes. Jeff Bezos at Amazon is putting up a competitive product. And in fact, he says later this summer he'll roll out his beta test. Now, it's only going to be available in a very narrow band. Very oddly, it stretches from Phoenix up to Buffalo. And so that little skinny piece of people can try it, because that's the path of the particular his first satellites. So he's going to be in the business. We don't know yet. He could bring the prices down, which would force Starlink to bring the prices down, or he could match the prices. Nobody knows. Amazon's made no statements. Around the world, there's a lot of other providers. There's a company called Huawei in China that's going to have 12,000. There's another called Quinfan in Shanghai that's going to have 15,000. There's another one out today called OneWeb. There's a bunch of more competition coming, but Starlink's probably always going to have the most satellites. I mean, he's got his own rockets, and that kind of gives him the lead, you know. So.
Sure. Doug, you'd mentioned that they could only handle 15 customers per square mile. Is that something that's going to hold firm? Is that something that technology might be able to expand in the future? Or is that just baked into satellite internet access?
Today it's baked in. So they're called V2, their second version of the satellites. It's baked into that one. That's the best it can do. Starting later this summer, they will start launching their V3, their newest satellites. That's going to increase that quite a bit. We don't know exactly the number, but it could be 6 or 8 times better than that.
Okay.
So now if you're talking, 70 people per square, still you're not going to do a city. You blow up those satellites. But you're starting to get a lot more. That limitation today is a true limitation. There are places where there's no other broadband. And once they have all the subscribers they want, they don't take any new subscribers. So there's places where there's people on a waiting list.
Doug Dawson is our guest. He's president of CCG Consulting, which is a telecom consulting firm that's done work here in Wisconsin. He's been in the industry since 1978. His daily blog's at Pots and Pans by CCG.com. When I think of Wisconsin when it comes to internet access, Doug, I do wonder whether or not this is, do you see it as a utility? Is it a necessity? Does the advent of 5G and cellular service make the idea of broadband internet access through DSL, cable, or satellite less important today?
DSL's dead. I mean, DSL will be gone by 2030. All the big companies are just tearing it down. So the copper wires will be either gone, or they'll use those wires to hang another wire on top of, like a fiber. Uh-huh. So there won't be any of it's DSL. Fiber has a tremendous capability, and it's going to be around for 100 years easily. The biggest boom, the most successful guys are the cellular guys. They have a product called FWA Cellular, and in it, which stands for fixed wireless. And they've sold 15 million new customers over the last 4 years. So now that's really gigantic. And the way they do that is they're bundling with your cell phone. If you already have their expensive cell phone plan, you can add broadband on for $30 or $40, which is very good. Mm-hmm. Their only limitation is it only works for about 2 to 3 miles around a cell tower. So it works good in cities. It does not work well in the rural areas.
You said cellular FWA for
FWA, which stands for fixed wireless access. That's the name of the that's generic name of that industry.
Would that imply to you, Doug, that we'll be seeing more cell towers in the future? Because the price, so I'm comparing the price now from, you know, Starlink's $130 to if you have the plan from the big three cell companies, you could add on for an extra $30-$40 internet. And my current internet, which would be the, I believe, copper wire would be about twice that, somewhere right in between the two.
Yeah. The big cell companies are actually shrinking the number of cell sites. So now I don't see them building a lot of new cell sites. They haven't done so for the last decade. It's very expensive to roll out a new cell site. And so I don't see them doing that. They cover the cities well. That's their market. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, they cover 90% of the people well. They don't really care about the other 10%.
It's not cost feasible, but go back to the question about whether or not we should consider internet's high speed, always connected internet, a utility, and that, you know, it's something that people need to have these days in order to just function.
I certainly believe that. The FCC says that they define internet to be 100 megabits down, 20 megabits up. You're not getting that on your copper line. Oh, no, you're not. You're not even close to that. But that's the definition of broadband. So they're saying that anybody gets at least those speeds is okay. Fiber can be 10 or 20 or 30 times faster than that. And, you know, cable companies are easily selling 1 and 2 gigabits too. So, I mean, those cable companies and the people of fiber are going to be around a long time. And certainly the cellular guys are going to be around because they're competing with cheap price. People don't want to pay $80 a month, they're going to buy the cheap cellular. So.
Yeah, it's just a consumer aspect of it. But
there
also is the idea that, you know, so governments are participating in trying to make sure that people have access to internet. Providers are participating in trying to make sure consumers have access to internet. And consumers are paying for the ability to have access to internet. And how those three parties work in concert, how do you see that reaching the rest of the state, whereas we cited the statistics, roughly 1 in 10 in Wisconsin still don't have that opportunity to buy in to a broadband fixed internet plan? How do we get to that 1 in 10 in Wisconsin, as you see it with your experience, Doug?
You're not going to like the answer.
Oh, no.
There's been a lot of grants in the process of being awarded, so there's going to be a lot of new rural fiber built. There's going to be a lot of what's called fixed wireless. It'll do pretty good speed. There's going to be a lot of places in Wisconsin where the NTIA, which is the federal agency that is awarding these grants, is going to give the money to Starlink or Amazon. And they're going to say, that's your broadband choice. And they're actually going to give them a subsidy.
So the solution, at least from the government's perspective, would be that we would continue to subsidize the SpaceX company for access to Starlink internet providing to consumers in the places where the cables have not been able to reach throughout Wisconsin. But the consumers will still have to pay that high rate or whatever rate that SpaceX would charge, correct?
Yeah, no discount for that. It does pay for your upfront equipment. That's probably all that you're going to get covered. That's a couple $100. So, yeah, they, between Amazon and Starlink, they want over 1 million lines of subsidized connections in the latest grants. And so where I lived in Western North Carolina, there's 7 counties where all the grant money went to satellite. People here are not very high. I'm sure that's happened in some of the places in Wisconsin as well.
So if Doug Dawson could make the decision about how to reach the roughly 1 in 10 in Wisconsin who do not have broadband access yet, opportunity to purchase adequate broadband access yet, what would your plan of attack be?
I would continue with state and federal grants, and I would still build networks to places that are within reasonable costs that you can afford to make the math work. And that's up to maybe $12,000 a location. There's some places that are just so expensive to get to, they don't make any sense to build a fiber line. I mean, there's places in Wisconsin where I guarantee you it's $100,000 to reach one guy. You don't build that.
Right.
Well, but they should build all the federal government should subsidize doing that, because that's exactly how we built rural electric companies. That's exact. So why don't we do that again? That's exactly how we did it. And look how well that's worked. So.
I was just thinking about how we wired, every corner of this country when it came to electricity, and what the questions would be when it came to figuring out how to connect every corner of this country to the internet, and whether or not the process wouldn't be the same. But it sounds to me, Doug, like it's going to be exponentially more expensive to do that with the internet than it was with electricity.
Yeah, and the difference of that is 100 years of inflation. So it's a lot more expensive. But what the government did then still works. They gave the people who built the rural stuff, which were cooperatives, they gave them 30 and 40 year loans at 2% interest. So it did mathematically work. And the money all got paid back. Nobody defaulted on those loans.
Huh. Yeah, that makes sense. Let me give out the phone number if you'd like to join the conversation about internet access across Wisconsin with our guest, Doug Dawson, president of CCG Consulting. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us talk@wpr.org. And Doug, I don't know if you can handle this, but Nathaniel from Bayfield, which is one of our northernmost counties, called to say he's concerned about the profusion of cell towers and service leading to the Kessler syndrome. Could you address, are you familiar with the Kessler syndrome?
Yes. The Kessler syndrome is a satellite. It talks about satellites. A guy named Kessler, I think he might have worked at NASA or else he was a professor, but he showed mathematically that if we get a couple major crashes of satellites bumping into each other, they create a lot of little debris. Now all those little pieces are going 17,000 miles an hour, right? Because that's how fast the satellite, they don't slow down just because they got little. So now we end up with a cloud. And then if those clouds of debris hit other satellites, it's conceivable that all of the satellites in the sky could be destroyed. Well, if this cloud just spreads around the Earth. Now, and I actually wrote a blog recently about that too, because, we have to have a system where we are very closely tracking where satellites are and make sure they get out of the way of each other. Even today we have, 40,000 satellites. What are we going to do when there's a million of them? I just don't know how they're going to keep track of these things. It's almost inevitable that we're going to have a problem. So
inevitability sounds like something we should plan for, and yet I don't hear any sort of strategies other than make sure these satellites don't crash into each other, or once they do crash, the millions of parts that they fall into don't crash into each other. Should have just called it the domino, the domino syndrome instead of the Kessler syndrome. I would have understood that much better. But you talked about Starlink has 12,000 satellites in the air right now. Elon says he wants 100,000 in the air right now, and our total satellites in the air right now is somewhere around 40,000. Does that math work to you as an expert in this field, Doug?
I'm going to freak you out now.
Oh, no.
He asked for 100,000 for broadband. He's asked for 1 million satellites. He wants to put a data center in space.
Well, he also wants to put a man on Mars, but that might not be viable either. But
he's not the only one. There's mm-hmm. a bunch of other companies that want to put data centers in space. So there's going to be a lot of satellites in space.
We did consumer protection last hour, and I think it was Tim in Madison called, and he was wondering if fiber optic lines can be tapped, rerouted, or hacked. Is that a possibility?
No. I've never heard of anyone directly getting a signal off of fiber. It's just way too encoded. It's light. It's not electricity. It just doesn't happen. Now, I say that there's always been rumors that the CIA has a way to listen in on the line coming out of like North Korea. We don't know if that's true, but in real life, we've never heard of a case. And I have a bunch of engineers work for me. We've never heard of a case of actually tapping into a fiber line.
So if it is happening, it would be happening at the higher echelons of government.
Over my pay scale. Yeah.
I hope we got that answered for you, Tim, and thank you. I'm glad we could follow up with our guest, Doug Dawson. Let's go to Spencer in Milton next. Spencer, hi.
Hey, my friends are just wondering, how does the satellite actually put the signals on Earth to like give you internet connection?
That is a great
question, Spencer. Yep. What they've done, they build something called Earth stations. So these are out in rural areas. There's probably one in Wisconsin somewhere. And so they get a place out in the middle of nowhere, and they put up like 100 big satellite dishes. And so the satellites communicate with those satellite dishes. That's also how we get the signal back up to the satellite. So the signal goes up and down. Right now, today in the U.S., there's about 100 Earth stations. We're certainly going to get a lot more over time. So
how does that Earth station satellite then get into Spencer's house?
It gets to his house from the satellite. It beams down directly to a dish he has at his house. The dish, Starlink dish, is about 2 feet by 2.5 feet.
Yeah.
So you put it on top of the roof or whatever, as we discussed, and it communicates through that dish.
All right, Spencer, thank you for the call. And it does feel kind of magical. Going back to the Kessler syndrome, Doug, do you see a critical mass in satellites? Will there be a time where it just won't be safe to launch satellites or perhaps launch rockets, period, because of the cloud of debris and other stuff that surrounds our orbit?
The very worst case, and again, I'm not trying to scare your reader because this is all speculation, but the worst case is there might be a cloud for 5 or 10 or 20 years where you couldn't even launch rockets. You know, if it really goes to, you know, just goes to a zillion pieces, because that stuff will eventually clear out. But the satellites do fall back to Earth. These are low orbit satellites. So the stuff does eventually fall out of the sky. But the critical mass is the day two big ones hit. That could be tomorrow, or that could be 75 years from now.
But what's the life cycle of these in low Earth orbit then? And if, Elon puts 100,000 in the air for Starlink, when would we expect 100,000 of these satellites to fall from the sky?
That's another good question. They only last about 5 years.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. So after 5 years, they fall out and they have to replace them. So even when he gets to 15,000, he's going to have to put up 250 every month just to stay even.
Well, that it's hard for me to wrap my head around that as a viable and economically, environmentally at all possible. Like, and yet the way you talk about it, our plan here, Doug, is to actually subsidize Starlink to provide internet for those who we can't reach economically through cable or fiber optics.
Yeah, one last thought, because you said the word ecologically. When they fall back down, they're mostly made out of aluminum, and they're putting aluminum oxide into the upper atmosphere, which is kind of killing the ozone. Yeah.
When I started this discussion, I thought of Starlink as a solution, but if it continues to expand as a solution, I can see more problems arising than perhaps the solutions that they aim to solve, Doug. What do you see a solution?
I think that if they really get their act together with safety measures, they might be able to get a lot of satellites up there. Right now, there's not even a U.S. agency who's actually in charge of satellite safety right now. No, Congress has not given any specific agency that authority.
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion, and I want to thank you very much for it, Doug. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. And as things develop, I would imagine we'll be reaching out to you again, whether it's falling up from space or going up into space. I'd like to keep up to date with you and find out what's next. So thank you for your time and wisdom today.
Thank you. It's been good to be on your show.
Doug Dawson is the president of CCG Consulting. He's worked in the telecom industry since 1978, and you can check out his blog online. He posts pretty much daily, Pots and Pans by CCG.com. I want to remind you that coming up Monday, we are going to be broadcasting live from the Grand Champion Hall at the Wisconsin State Fair in West Allis. I want to invite everybody out. You can also listen to the show from 11 to 1, but we'll be broadcasting live. I believe we'll be broadcasting during a competition featuring Sandra Lee, featuring old-fashioned desserts of some kind. So, and that's going to be in the same room as we are. So me and Sandra Lee are going to be in the same room at the same time. I'll be doing the show and she'll be doing the old-fashioned dessert competition. And hopefully you'll be there as well, either on the radio or at the State Fair in the Grand Champion Hall. Hope to see you there. I'm Lee Rayburn. And our conversation about broadband continues next. You're listening to WPR News.